You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. Got a good episode this week. I'm excited, Ben. I'm excited. Got a full house tonight. Literally, we're in the basement of my house with basically the entire Lions beat, minus our friend Dave Bruquette. Shout out, Dave, for standing us up, I guess. But no, we have the beat writer roundtable back, something we started last year after the season, and I really enjoyed it, Ben. Gave us an opportunity kind of to sit down for 45 minutes or whatever it was and really talk about the Detroit Lions in an in-depth way, which doesn't always happen. I'm excited. We got full house here. We got Justin Rogers from the Detroit News, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, Eric Woodard from ESPN. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
What's going on? Been in some tight press boxes, fellas. I don't know. I've ever sat this close to the group. I'm this cozy.
Well, like I said, when you guys arrived, like we just spent, I don't know, 6 months looking at each other. And now we're a week into the off season and we're doing it again. But appreciate your time. Like I said, I had fun doing this last year. You know, sometimes it can be hard to chop this stuff up in a meaningful way. And it's easy to do with you guys. We've seen a lot of Lions football on the field, practices, locker room. I mean, has anyone in America seen more losses than this guy's in this room right now?
It's funny. What? John Neo, our beloved columnist, once asked me if I knew my record on the beat. And I thought, no, like, that's a terrible question. And he knew exactly what his record was covering the team. And he covered the 0-16 season. He had it, I think, worse than we did. But it's not pretty. And you looked yours up at one point, right?
When the team was 1-6, I looked it up, and it was 31 games under 500. So my first 3.5 seasons on the beat. So
you're sitting there after that Dolphin game, man, like, knowing your record, the perfect line, just like sitting there trying to go through it. Those ones.
Well, and you don't have, you can't say shit, man.
I've got a winning record. I don't know
about Cole walks in and then immediately has a winning record. Justin and I have been around for a goddamn decade. We have seen a lot of losses, Justin.
A lot.
A couple ties, too.
Those are the worst ones. Those are worse than the losses.
Yeah. Last year was crazy, though, like, because they didn't even win in the preseason. So I'm like, man,
so it's going to be the whole year. Like, you know, it's much better this year.
But at least, like, that year you went into it and you kind of knew that's what it was going to be. We went into years where they thought they were going to win. And then you just come out of it and you're like, oh, 4-12. That was fun.
Well, I will say they went winless in however many games it was last year to open the year, right? And then I got COVID. And I'm sitting at home watching the Lions in their first game. I'm like, man, I've had to go through these locker rooms, literal tumbleweeds going through the place because there's no one around to ask questions because they can't win a game. And they finally win a game, and I'm sitting at home with COVID.
I will say one thing that made them losing a little bearable, I guess. Yeah. Just like having Dan Ryan every day.
Yeah.
If he would have been, you know, on a band, we made it a lot worse last year, but like, he's pretty much consistent every day, which made it. He didn't make it as bad as he could have possibly been, because I've been around some pretty bad coaches in the past. So,
well, all of us in this room besides Colin,
we're survivors of the Matt Patricia era, man.
Like I said at the top, guys, everyone in this room has seen some stuff, but, you know, like, so have all of the fans. And, you know, it's one thing I think that, for me at least personally, makes this job a lot of fun in some twisted way is being a fan of the Lions is different. And by extension, being a reporter covering the Lions is different too. When you're covering a team that hasn't won anything since 1957, just won playoff games since 1957, you could hear it seeped out of the fans, right? Like, even the sense of humor is like this, like, gallows humor. It's very
some dark shit, right? And that's where the conduit between the fans and the team. And it really, I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's definitely unique, I'll put it that way. And I think it's a radio bit, but I'm sure everybody here's got the emails where the fans immediately have to announce their credentials, right? I've been watching since Briggs Stadium in 1942, and I've seen every quarterback, and Bobby Lane used to mow my lawn when he was a kid. That's like part of Lions fandom, I think, is you have to announce how long you've suffered. It, establishes the level of fandom.
We've all suffered, this team in some way. The team has obviously itself. The times these days aren't good, guys. And as we get rolling, I think we should start with Ben Johnson, if we can. You know, the Lions rolled this year down the stretch, and the offense was a huge reason for it, right? And the big news this week is Ben Johnson, the architect of that offense, coming back to Detroit. He was expected to get on a plane today, guys, to go to Charlotte for a second interview with Panthers. You know, those kinds of situations, those guys don't often come back, you know? With Dan Campbell 2 years ago, when he got on a plane, he didn't go back. I thought he was going to get a job with how in demand he was. You certainly don't expect him to turn down the opportunity to interview for that job. That took me by surprise. Curious your guys' reactions when you heard the news coming down this week.
Pretty shocked, honestly.
I thought he was gone for sure.
That's what you get into the business for as a gig.
The head coach syndrome, but I think it says a lot about what they're building in Detroit. You know what I mean? Just that he's that confident that they can come back again, and he's that confident that they could possibly be even better. I don't think he'd see them taking a step back. So yeah, that's always a pretty shocking, but I think it's good news for Lions followers as well. Man, hey, Dan Campbell, I mean, he already said how much he wanted him back, but he wouldn't hold him back. So I think that's just letting him know that he's building a good staff as well. And I think Ben, you know, if everything goes as planned, he'll be back in his position next year.
Yeah, when you see, what was it, three teams that reach out like immediately the first day they could for Ben Johnson, like, I guess my mind said, I don't know, man, one of these teams offers, like, he's got to be gone, right? Especially like the Panthers. Seemed like he was in some serious talk with them a little bit for their little spot there. And he's from North Carolina, so I thought that might be a good fit for him. You know, a team that's probably going to be looking for a quarterback. He can kind of mold that roster in his own vision. So when I heard that, you know, he was coming back, that was, it took me aback a little bit. But at the same time, I think it speaks to kind of what Eric said. You know, these guys feel like they're building something new in Detroit. They got a young roster, pretty good offense, as we've seen, top five across the board in a lot of areas. And I think you want to see that through. This franchise has been, you know, losers for a long time, and they're trying to turn that around and make it sustainable. And I think whether he's here long-term or not, like, it seems like he's going to take a coaching job one day, but at least you can keep that trajectory going a little bit more. I'm sure that's great news for Lions fans and great news for Dan Campbell.
I share a lot of his feelings as well. I think too, though, that, you know, there's 32 of these jobs in the world, right? So, like, I just expected Ben Johnson to go for it because these guys always do. And you don't know, like, he's got that window.
Yeah.
They won a bunch of games this year. His offense was hot. He's got the window. You don't know what's going to happen next year, what contract situation is going to happen, what injury situation can happen.
Down.
Exactly. You know, Ben, what was your reaction when you heard the news this week on Ben Johnson?
Surprised at how it went down. You know, I always kind of had reservations about the idea of him getting a job this offseason, not based on who he is or what he could be, but just, you know, it's a first-time offensive coordinator, a first-time play caller. It would have been quite the jump just to go from that into 2023 with the head coaching job. But the second that report came down that he was flying to Carolina, in-person interview, I mean, yeah, walk-on quarterback at North Carolina is from the state. It was like, oh, this is real. They're trying to get their man to town, yeah, trying to make sure he can't leave that airport, can't leave that area. So it's going down. So very, very fascinating. I wish we'd love to be a fly on the wall in those conversations, because it's like, yeah, there's, like you said, Kyle, there's 32 of these. There's 32 of those. Those are big money jobs. That is what you're doing here. And there's not too many people who have had the opportunity to get one of those jobs at his age with his kind of track record of experience. So surprising for sure, but great news for the Lions.
So I've got a little bit more of a cynical take than everybody else in this room. Yeah. I think Ben Johnson knew he wasn't getting a job. I think that he read the tea leaves. I think that the Carolina job was particularly interesting because of all the connections. But I think what we know about David Tepper, their owner, is he's maybe the wealthiest owner in the NFL or top three. Mm-hmm. He's a swing for the fences type guy. I think he was interested in Ben Johnson, but ultimately a first year coordinator doesn't really move the needle with a guy like that. I think Johnson carefully calculated his offers, realized that probably nothing was coming to fruition, and pulled out at the right time where it looks good for him. He went through the process, but then he can pull out and say, I'm staying committed to my job. Who announced that? Who put it in that language? The NFL Network. And that's a PR arm of the league. I mean, that's what they do, is they prop up guys like that. Nothing against Ben Johnson. I think that this was the right move for him. I think, you know, in echoing what Ben said, like, he's already so far ahead of the game, just having three interviews as a first-year coordinator, he is on track for one of these jobs. But I think that a lot of these teams that talked to him probably said, we'd like to see a little bit more. Question I always go back to is with Terrell Austin, right? And the staffing was the big problem for Austin when he was going through those interview cycles. He didn't have a good staff in place. And I think that hurt him when he was at his hottest. When we tried to ask him, Ben Johnson, you know, some questions about his potential candidacy, he clearly shut us down. Respect it. But that would probably be my biggest question was, what was Johnson's staffing plan with these guys? Because I think that can really hurt a candidacy. But I don't think there was any serious movement towards an offer, and everybody saves positive face and he can go back to this well again next year with a better resume if they're able to repeat the 9-8 success that they had or build on the 9-8 success they had this year.
Justin, you drove at something that is interesting to me. It's the insider baseball of how this stuff is done. I'm not sure how many people realize it sometimes, but when this report comes down from the NFL Network, Tom Pelissero, who did a good job for them, but it's easy to tell if you're in this business where this information is coming from. The tweet itself reporting this news says Ben Johnson feels Detroit is building something special and wants to see it through.
Sure.
I think that's all true. I think that's a small wedge of the pie that we're dealing with. And I wrote that today in my column. I'm sure that's part of it. I'm sure it's only part of it, right? And there could be something about the Panthers' job that he didn't like. I know that Tepper is a heavy-handed owner in terms of, you know, how meddlesome some of the owners are. There's an unknown quarterback situation, which is a big deal for an offensive, well, for any head coach, but particularly one who's coming in to put his offense in. But I think bottom line, no matter some of these unknown variables that we don't know, I do think him coming back speaks to the strength of the organization in a way that we haven't seen before, right? Like, the situation in Detroit is so good, for lack of a better word, but maybe stable, healthy. Like he's going back to a good situation with a quarterback who's playing well that he already has a good relationship with. Basically, everyone's back. Besides Jamal Williams, he might be back anyway. But most of the guys are locked up. Got 2 first-round picks, 5 picks in the first 3 rounds. It's a great situation. He's going to have a very good chance to come back and look good doing it. And I think that him coming back, more than anything to me, I'm sure there's more variables at play than what we already know publicly. But to me, the bottom line, that really does speak to the culture and the thing that they built in Detroit and how sound that thing is.
I mean, just the fact that the Lions have 2 coordinators that are interviewing for jobs just kind of speaks to the health, kind of what you mentioned. So I don't see that as a negative. And for these guys, like, we can go out there and get the experience, whether you were a serious candidate or not. It's going to help you in the long run, especially for a guy like Ben Johnson, who only 1 year as a coordinator, but the trajectory he's on, you can tell that he's going to be a head coach one day if the offense keeps up what they've been doing. So it's not a bad thing to kind of learn another year under Dan Campbell. Another question I just had with Johnson, it's more like we just haven't seen it. Being a head coach is so much more than like calling a hook and ladder on 3rd down. It's like building a roster. It's managing egos and personalities and making the tough decisions in games. So, you know, Johnson's got it down as a play caller and as a guy that can craft an offense around his personnel. But the other decisions and the other things that go into being the head coach, we just don't know about. So that's something that he's probably going to have to convince teams of in the interview process. So if he's getting that experience now, let's pray for him.
What do you guys think makes Ben Johnson so good at his job?
I think he's personable. Seemed like pretty easy to get along with. I don't sense he got like a super big ego. And you kind of see that, like, that's probably why he meshes with Jared Goff so well. So it seems like Jared's personality is a lot like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you look at, you know, somebody else who might be a little more rah-rah, that might not go along great with Jared Goff. So I think that personality aspect is huge in connecting with players. And, you know, when you got a guy like Dan that's dialed up all the time, you got to have somebody come there smooth out.
I think what's interesting about Ben is he's not rooted in one offensive system. You know, he's got these different roots with different coordinators that ran different schemes, and yet he's somehow, we hear multiple defenses all the time, and we understand what that means because there's a lot of them in the NFL. We don't see multiple offenses very often, and that's kind of what the Lions were. They were flexible enough to match different types of opponents with different styles of football. And, you know, Johnson gets a lot of credit for being creative. And, you know, I asked him about that this preseason, before the season started, and he said, well, creativity is not really a thing. He goes, all these plays existed in some way, shape, or form. We're all borrowing and modifying from each other. He said, the art of play calling is the timing of the play, right? It's knowing when to call that play so that it'll work. And he clearly has a really good knack for that. And what he's done is he's conveyed that to Jared, right? They've got this symbiotic relationship that Eric was talking about. Jared said something late in the season that Ben had conveyed early in the season that he wanted. Like, he wants Jared to understand the why for every play. At the end of the season, Jared said, like, every time he calls something, I know exactly why he's doing it. And I think that is really, really huge to have that quarterback coach relationship of knowing why you're doing it, what the vision is against which defenses and situations that leads to I think the consistent success that he saw when the roster was relatively healthy.
I think he's really good at putting we hear a lot about square peg, round hole kind of thing, right? Especially with Matt Patricia and all those things that we went through during the previous regime. I think Ben Johnson is really good at putting, square pegs into square holes. Like he did a great job of identifying his own strengths and weaknesses of his offense and of the defense and matching up accordingly. I think he does a great job of knowing his own players and how to put them in positions to succeed. When we were in New York for that Jets game, I mean, it was obvious that it was like Amon-Ra St. Brown was the game plan that day, right? And like he touched the ball and like lining up in four different parts of the offense in that first two drives or so, right? Getting your best players to make their best plays. Look at the way he uses Panay. I think that's maybe some of the best, most creative stuff that he's done, to Justin's point. Like, how creative is it to use an offensive tackle split out at receiver and tight end? It's pretty creative. I mean, we've seen it before, but like, he's just taking a super athletic 330-pound man and putting them in positions to succeed. And I think it's good work. I mean, it just makes it look almost easy sometimes, right? I mean, they went through some lulls when there was injuries and whatnot, but when they're healthy, they've rolled more often than not. And I think that just identifying the strengths and weaknesses and putting them on each other went a long way, because obviously he's worked with Jared Goff, right? That's been his biggest successes in Detroit. And hearing Jared talk repeatedly about some of those sessions that they had last offseason, where they talked about ball and they watched ball and they watched film and they watched Goff's film and they watched film of some of their opponents, and just getting an idea from Ben Johnson about what his quarterback was about, what he liked, what he didn't like, what made him feel uncomfortable, how to address some of those things, how to avoid some of those things, and then designing a playbook accordingly. Goff had never had that before. Sean McVay had a system and they put it in largely, and Goff was expected to run it. And in Detroit, it was more of a symbiotic relationship. And I think it brought out the best in Jared Goff.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him play like that in a long time.
No. Ben's ability as a communicator and to convey a message and just kind of get everybody on the same page is really sticks out. I remember training camp, it was Hawkinson, it was Ragnow, it was Jared, it was Decker, just his ability to not just relate with them, to kind of communicate with them to where it was just kind of like a seamless transition. I think he and Jared speak the same language. Like it's really easy to sit back there and be a creative play caller, but it's another thing to have everybody on the same page and understanding it. Ben Johnson, on one hand, has got his guys kind of responding like that. I just picture the anti of that, like Jimbo Fisher flipping through his like 32-page call sheet, just Ben Johnson. It's like streamlined, it's communicated. Everybody just feels on the same page. I mean, everybody will call him a genius, but everybody, like Franks, is just relatable. He's got a youthful relatability to him. And I just think he speaks the same language and he knows how to get on the same page with everybody. I mean, he's a quarterback whisperer with what he's done with Goff.
I remember watching Scott Linehan when he was here. He would do the same setup for a play, like three or four different ways. And he was trying to lull you into not seeing something that he was going to do different with it the third or fourth time he did it. I think a lot of mid-coordinators are that, and you see that a lot with Ben. You just the Panay Sewell kind of you're talking about. Like before they threw it to Panay, they put in motion, what, two times before that, right? Like at some point, like, you've fooled them into a false sense of security of like that motion isn't that thing that you're going to do eventually. And Ben does that a lot.
Yeah.
Like it's once a game, like the things that he's doing throughout the game is setting something up at the end of the game. And, that's just another, you see that with good coordinators frequently.
I think it was last year, but the game with Amon-Ra St. Brown, where he kept coming around on the end around, and it was eye candy. And then at the end of the game, they popped him with it. I remember Amon-Ra telling us, like, by the time they saw what was happening, like, they couldn't do shit about it. And that's literally, like, he's like,
a defender said, oh, shit, or something.
Right. It's like, yeah, but the sequencing of his plays is, like, really impressive. I don't know what game it was, but they were, I think, inside the 30 or the 20, and they're doing, like, a toss to the left. And they come back a few plays later and Goff does that little fake toss and then strikes it for a touchdown. Like it's the eye candy. It's a sequencing of plays. It's trying to convince them that you're doing one thing and come back with another. I think Ben Johnson's really good at that. I think that's a product of the detail and, the time like that he spends on the game plan. I really love hearing him talk about that stuff. Like, we found something on like a Thursday night that we kind of put in at the last minute, or like a Saturday night right before the game. We like that. So if we got the look, we were going to run it. Like hearing stuff like that and kind of the detail of it, I think that shows that Johnson knows what he's doing with this offense and they're in pretty good hands with him.
Swift told me that hook and ladder that we talked about that week. I mean, it went in that week. It was something they had not practiced at any point during the season or anything. He's like, we practiced it a couple times that week and just the moment was right.
Well, I talked to Jared about that play and Jared's like, when they practiced it, the defense was off.
Yeah,
and when they lined up in the game, you were playing press man. So it was like, Jared's like, I knew I had to get the ball to him extremely quick because the guy was going to be on top of him. I watched the play back after talking to him. I could see
it's remarkable that he got that, the pitch off when he did.
The best part of the play, though, right? It's Panay Sewell getting his high horse in the open field and completely annihilating the defensive. Ben and I were standing away, I don't know how far, like 10 yards away from that play. The thing is, like, when you watch the copy, right? Like, you have an appreciation for Panay Sewell. But watching him in person, like we have the privilege of doing, and standing 10 yards away while he's taking out Jeff Okuda at that practice, like what he does at his size, I just have not seen it with my own eyes. I was talking to Lomas Brown before the season, and Lomas, who was an all-pro, borderline Hall of Fame kind of player, he said that Panay was already better than him. He said the difference was the mobility, the way he can run, the way he carries 330 pounds. It's singular. It doesn't, you just don't see it.
Crazy young athletes in every sport, right? Like they just keep getting better and they keep getting bigger and stronger. And I mean, we just see it generation to generation, whether it's the NBA or the NFL, like they're just better. And it's just wild just to watch that development, to think that 15 years from now, like Panay Sewell will be saying, well, Lomas Brown saying, like, that kid's better than him. Like, what does that look like? Kyle, do you remember who Ndamukong Suh said should be better than him someday? It was some defensive tackle. And he's like, this guy should be better than me. Well, that didn't happen.
So the excitement is building, and understandably so, right? Because you got Ben Johnson back. You've got basically everyone else back to Jamal Williams, who's, I think, the big question mark on offense. Him and DJ Chark. In terms of the NFL, that's a lot of stability. And you have an offense that was top five, top 10, and basically all the ways this year. I guess as we look forward, what's the next step, do you guys think, for that offense? I think about that because the excitement is so high. Jared Goff, we just saw basically a career season. Some of his numbers were better in LA, but even he said that he probably was playing some of the best ball of his career. But I guess, how do you avoid a regression? Like it's the NFL. You got to evolve and you have to mature, or the league catches up to you. I guess as you look forward, guys, where do you see room for improvement? What do you expect the Lions try to do going forward?
I think consistency, you know, with DeAndre Swift. You know, I think, you know, we all see the talent we see is there. I know, you know, holders have gotten away, but I think him showing on that dynamic, the ability that we know he had, doing it more consistent, I think that'll really take this team to the next level. Because, I mean, we know he can do it when he's healthy. But it's just like, and we know that Jamal Williams has been that goal line threat. But, you know, they're putting up numbers as a unit. But I think just having that guy who can break free consistently, I think that's one thing for this offense. And I think just getting this with that deep ball. I know what the numbers and the stats say with Jared Goff, but we watched him. He's been a little off with those deep balls this year. So I think really putting time, and I think that's why they got Jamison coming in a full year, getting in sync with him. So I think if those two guys can be consistent, I think that's going to take this offense all the way to the next level. We know what Amon-Ra St. Brown going to do. He's as reliable as anybody on this team. So I think if they can get those two aspects on our track, this team is already dangerous. Our offense was going to be even scarier if they can somehow keep Swift healthy.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? I guess what Eric said, I mean, the deep ball, what Jameson can bring to the table, because even when there were moments when Chark wasn't playing, like when he was on IR, when he was injured, they were definitely missing that element of their offense wasn't there. So I think having Ben Johnson back to mold Jameson Williams into the player that he wants him to be is that. I mean, I'm intrigued to see what he does next year. I think it was Brad Holmes that said at his press conference, like, we haven't even seen what he's going to be in the future yet, like, which is fair. So if he can get the most out of Jameson, Jameson's putting the work this offseason. I think Goff already said he's going to try to get him together and throw with him a little bit. That can unlock a different level of this offense. I do kind of wonder, you know, what's the ceiling with this running game? Because Swift just hasn't proven that he can be a lead back in the NFL and stay healthy. Yeah. You know, Jamal's a really good back, a really good number two. Rushed for 1,000 yards and 17 touchdowns. It's a damn good season, but I wonder what his market will look like. You know, I know you already said he wants to come back, but he's getting up there a little bit. So I wonder if they can draft a younger running back that can maybe take advantage of those second level yards and stay healthy. And I think that might be another thing that can unlock this offense and take to the next level and maybe limit some regression, especially if they lose some guys like DJ or Jamal.
Yeah. No, it's what both of you said. It's the consistency of what they did in those final nine games and trying to maintain that. And then it's getting Goff and Jameson on the same page, because it's like, they had some missed moments. Jameson had some struggles catching the ball. Goff missed him deep in New York, I believe. They had the one called back in Green Bay. I mean, the offense looked pretty good during that stretch. You had those plays in there, and that's at another level right there. But yeah, what you said with the running game, I think Swift's in the final year of his contract, struggled to do anything after. I mean, he basically just gets shut down every time he touches the ball 15, 16 times, it seems like. So there's a big question mark there. The talent's there for sure. But like, Williams is a free agent. Swift has got 1 year deal left. I mean, you got to, with that offensive line, you don't want to waste a second. You need talent back there. I know what people say about drafting running backs in the first round, but they do need a little infusion of talent back there for sure.
I mean, I look at what the Jets and Seahawks did in the second round, getting Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall. I think the Jets had Michael Carter and Rashard Penny was with the Seahawks, and both those rookies looked great when they played. So, I mean, that's a way to maximize. If you can get a running back in the second, third round, it's a pretty deep class. I don't want to get too far into the draft. I'm just saying, that could have been something that
Sure. I had some time to look up some numbers just to kind of confirm. But one, I was surprised the Lions averaged 4.5 yards per carry this year. It's really, really good. But you look at seven of the final 11 games as a team, 110 yards or less rushing.
Yep.
I think they need more consistency on the ground. We already know Goff is a phenomenal play-action quarterback. When you're having success on the ground, that opens that element up. No, I look at the right guard spot as kind of an important way to get that going. Fraley, the offensive line coach, frequently says, like, you're a fist, right? As offensive line, it's five fingers making a fist, and you're only as strong as your weakest link. And right guard, Evan Brown filled it admirably, but like played a lot better at center than he did at right guard. I think they really need to address that spot, get that run game to be more consistent. It's not even just the deep ball with JMO. Like that guy just needs to get on the same page with his quarterback. The quarterback needs to get the same page with him. I'm not going to judge the kid until he gets a full offseason, a full training camp with everything, but like they need those shallow crossers that he can turn from 5 to 60. They need the deep ball. They need all that, especially if Chark's not going to be back. Like they need JMO to be ready to step up immediately.
I mean, it's crazy though, just the flashes that we saw when, you know, he could have easily had three touchdowns, literally.
Four touchdowns.
Just excitement seeing this kid in the future. Like it really is. I haven't really been anybody with swag. Like,
there's an aura.
Yeah, it's around little Barry. As great as Barron was and as great as Calvin was, they didn't have that, like, swag to them. Like, yeah, I mean, they did, but they didn't.
Hand the ball to the official in the end zone.
Yeah. Come on, guys, if that makes sense. Jamal got the swag. He coming in with his chain, with his, got his little logo. He just got a whole other swag to him that's just like, I can't remember the last guy in Detroit that kind of, like, had it. So I just come and see him play. It's exciting to see a young guy like that coming up.
Obviously, the expectations for Jameson were enormous, right? And I think that week he came back to practice and people are just losing their minds. And we're watching him at practice just not doing anything. I mean, he's the last guy in the receiver line. He's dropping balls. I mean, as is hell, but like unrefined in every other way. Ben and I did a podcast that week and said, like, we don't even think he's going to play. I mean, like with this little amount of practice time, how much time he's missed, the significance of the injury he's coming off of, the fact that they're like climbing back into this thing and then the reps matter in the game. And of course, they did activate him for that game after Thanksgiving, whatever game that was. And then you saw JMO reality, which was a kid who's just not ready. I mean, he played however many snaps it was that.
So one catch and nine targets, like, that's notable, right?
And that's where I'm going with that, Justin, is the obviously the abilities that the speed is there. It's possible that no one has ever been faster than that guy in Honolulu Blue. Ever. It's crazy, but when you're in our practice facility, we're looking down, it, like, they can have no numbers on the jersey and be like, okay, that's JMO. And he would just stand out. Like, the athleticism is crazy, but there were struggles on the field, lack of chemistry with Goff. I think there were some, like, missed assignments. I don't think there's a lot of consistency with his route running, which leads to inaccuracies with the quarterback because he's not always in the spot that he's supposed to be in. I mean, that's what makes Amon Ross so good and so reliable for Jared Goff, right? Like, Jared knows exactly where he's going to be and when. They don't have that relationship yet with Jameson, and it's understandable because he was deprived of all the development opportunities these guys usually have, right? So I guess my question on the JMO subject for you guys is, like, where's your level of concern with JMO? I think it's low for all of us, but I do think that there are some things that are obvious that he needs to correct. And I asked Brad Holmes about that in his press conference, right? Like, organizationally speaking, like, what's the plan for JMO? Because it's very clear that guy has a long way to go before he's the guy everyone wants him to be next year.
Like I said, I want to see this kid for a full offseason program. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to see how, you know, what was the Holmes said, like, we're going to give him a plan in the offseason and it's up to him to fulfill it, right? Like, is he going to go work out with Jared in California? You know, who is he going to train with? And, you know, what is mini camp and OTAs and training camp look like? Because you're right, the route running wasn't there. It's almost like he doesn't have full, he can't harness his speed, right? Like, it's only 0 or 60. Like, there's no in between for him. And it's finding the nuances of when to come back for the ball, when to just on a crossing route. You know, it can't be all deep balls or it's not worth where he was drafted, right? You want to see more of the Tyreek Hill element to his game where he can do a lot of different things and crush it with the deep ball. And, you know, all we've seen so far is the deep ball and the end around, which is just getting the ball in his hands.
Nick, my biggest level of concern is the fit with the quarterback. You know, Jared Goff, even at his best this season, is not the elite kill you a downfield thrower. And, you know, we kind of saw that with J-Mo. And I mean, the thing about Goff is he's at his best when stuff's going to script, when stuff's going to plan, and like J-Mo's route running, their chemistry plays into that. I mean, that's where my level of concern is. If maybe they get their chemistry up, I mean, can it still be a fit between those two? Can Goff make those throws? I mean, J-Mo's somebody that can get downfield 45, 50 yards in a hurry. Can Goff be the guy to put him that ball there? So That's on J-Mo, that's on Goff.
I just think he needs to be a little patient. You know, he's a rookie who didn't make his debut until, what was it, week 13?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Sometime in December. And I mean, that's to be expected. I remember, you know, Nick Baumgartner telling me that the coaches kind of had to reel him back in like training camp or maybe OTAs because he wanted to be out there. And it's like, bro, you tore your ACL in January. Like, you got to take it slow, man. And so I think patience is his best friend. You know, obviously he was kind of frustrated at the end of the season about his lack of opportunities, but you put in the work, they're going to put you on the field. I think that's what Dan Campbell's proven throughout his tenure. Like, we've seen guys like John Kaminsky, like Isaiah Bugs, like work themselves into the lineup just because some of it out of opportunity, but some of it out of, you know, guys just proving themselves and proving capable of being in the rotation. So J-Mo, they have big plans for him. I think he knows that. It's just a matter of being patient and putting the work and taking your time. You'll fly to California to golf, hopefully, and, you know, get some experience with those deep balls. Because I think, and I'm not one of those guys that thinks golf cannot throw the ball deep. Like, he did it in LA. Yeah. I think he didn't have the weapons in his first year in Detroit, and now he's got some more. So you give him the time, you put in the work with him, I think they'll be fine. So I think it's just a matter of just being patient and, you know, knowing you're on the right track.
It's almost like he's got to trust himself
to
throw it 5 yards further than he normally would. Yeah. Because that kid will get there.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. You think it needs to be 50? Throw it 60. Yeah. He'll be there. Don't worry about
it. Right underneath it. Yep. Yeah.
I'll say Ruckus here is not really football really. In a sense, there's like, you know how receivers are, man, right? Prima donnas. And I think he kind of like.
That was a bad side to the swag.
Yeah, it's the bad side to the swag. Good and it's bad. Like, constantly talking about culture. He's kind of like the only guy that doesn't fit their hard work.
I get that just talking to him. He doesn't have the character profile of a Penei Sewell or an Amon-Ra St. Brown or Melty Rodriguez or
like him and Amon-Ra. Like, you want so badly for him to latch on to Amon-Ra and beat off of whatever that guy's projecting. We just don't know if that'll develop that way.
I did ask Jared Goff at his locker when he was cleaning it out after the season about the throwing sessions with Jameson and all the other receivers. He basically laughed in my face. That I think is because I think he's tired of hearing about, hey, are you throwing off season guys? Because it's a question you get a lot.
Yeah. And I know that it became like a little thing in training camp last year when it came out that he had forgotten to invite Trinity Benson to the throwing session.
There was a lot for it.
So speaking of Jared Goff,
we got double Jared Goff.
Played very well.
That's objective, right? Like we're all on the same page that he played beyond expectation, beyond reasonable expectation. I mean, really even going back to the second half of 2021, after the change of play caller, Ben Johnson got more involved. Things got better and things were very good last year in basically all the ways. His passer rating was sandwiched between Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. You can win with Josh Allen, you can win with Joe Burrow, and you can win with Jared Goff. Rams did, the Lions did down the stretch this year. He's pretty clearly quarterback one going forward for at least 2023 based on the production, the tea leaves, what the coaches are outright telling us. I mean, everything points to him being the guy for this year. I guess, how do you guys view the long-term situation of quarterback? Where do you stand going into the draft on the quarterback situation? Is Goff your guy and you just want to build around him all out, particularly in this year where you can push for a division title, or is quarterback on the table for you guys? I think it's an interesting debate. People can, I think, disagree on this and have good points. And there's just a broad spectrum of opinion on this topic. I'm curious to hear where you guys stand.
I don't think it matters what we think. I think it matters what we think Brad Holmes thinks. I think Brad Holmes pretty all in on Goff. I can't definitively say that, but I've never got any vibes from him otherwise. And so, you know, there's 2 years left on the contract that gives you leeway to kind of keep coasting along with what you do have. I don't think you're pressed into anything now, but you know, they're clearly at a turning point in their rebuild where there's an opportunity to win divisions and win playoff games. And I think you can add an impact player at six that doesn't need to be quarterback. I know a lot of people, or there's a segment of people that, you know, thinks that you need to always be suing the Allen or the Mahomes of the future, but it's just so hard to find that guy. I couldn't put the right words to describe it, and Holmes says it perfectly at his end of your presser, right? It's so much easier to get worse quarterback. And I think the one thing that is maybe a little condescending to say about Jared Goff, but I don't think he would deal well mentally, emotionally with the Lions drafting a quarterback early with the idea that, like, you draft that guy, that's your replacement, right? I think Goff would react more like Aaron Rodgers with Jordan Love than Alex Smith with Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, I think he would take it personally. I think he could infiltrate how he affects his play, his mentality. And I don't think the Lions are in a position where they want to rock the boat. And I don't think it's just that. I think they genuinely believe in this guy.
Yeah. Brought up Holmes and Al Smith. I guess for me, it's like the Lions aren't even where the Chiefs were when they made that decision. Like the Chiefs were in the playoffs like for years and were getting bounced in the first round before they even had to make a decision to determine that Al Smith was not their guy. So for me, it's like you have a quarterback that's playing well in your system. You get Ben Johnson back. Like you say, you want to compete for the NFC North next year. Do what you can to make that happen. And I think the biggest, you know, issue we've seen is that defense. You know, you got to get some talent. So if you use your first two firsts on a couple of defenders, maybe one of the second round picks, and you spend wisely in free agency, like you can turn that defense around in a hurry. And I think Aaron Glenn wants sort of that talent to work with that he hasn't had in past years. And I think for me, it's like get to the playoffs first. Let's see how Goff performs in the playoffs. And then maybe down the road, if you, you know, he's got 2 years left in his deal, right? Like you can determine then if he's your long-term guy or not. If you want to re-sign him, that money might be a little bit higher next time you have to pay him. That might be a factor too. But to me, it's like build up your roster first before you have to, you know, make that decision, I guess.
Smith was so pedestrian too that you know, they drafted Mahomes.
Yeah.
15 touchdowns, 9 picks, like just, you know, was very average quarterback. Flacco clearly was on the downside when they went Lamar Jackson. Like, Jared Goff just had one of his best seasons ever.
Borderline
and he's
global.
Young, like, fits your system. I just think that it's all points to this is Jared Goff's team for the long term.
Yeah, it's at the point now where it's like, he's going to play out that contract. That's what my mind tells me. He's going to be the starting quarterback for that contract. But it's like, you start looking at, it's pretty bare bones behind him. I mean, it's Nate Sudfeld, and that's it. Goff's off the books.
Is Josh Dobbs still here?
Yeah, no, he's... almost starting playoff games for the Titans somehow. So I just think they haven't drafted a quarterback since what, 2016?
Brad Taya in 2017.
Yeah, there you go. I just think it would send a message. And what Justin said about Goff being the wrong guy for that type of passing of the torch, I fully believe in. So I think quarterback should be on the board. It should be on the table, especially with 5 picks projected in the first 91, 92 selections. But don't do it with one of the first round picks, I don't think. I think stay away from that. Build that defense, like Colton said, because you've seen that Goff can win with this offense. You've kind of built a system around him this year, and he performed well in it. I mean, 9 wins, 9-8 on the cusp of the postseason. Build that defense out a little more. Give him a shot. See what he's got. Like you said, you know, I think that Chiefs, Alex Smith, Mahomes one is really, you can see it kind of teetering in that direction. It is what it kind of feels like. So it's like, it's flexibility. That's what we talked about last week. It's flexibility at the quarterback position, and that's the best thing that Goff has really given him with this good play.
That is where I stand. I think it goes both ways, and I think I put more into the Lions drafting a quarterback than a lot of people these days, just getting on what Goff has played and their public statements about him. Man, draft at 6, to be clear, anywhere, depending on the evaluation. And that is the point that I've been making is, for me, Jared Goff's emergence, reemergence, it gives the Lions flexibility, I think, that no one expects them to have at this point. I think at this point, we all expect them to be drafting a quarterback to use one of these resources. They got a Stafford trade to go replace Matthew Stafford. And instead, in that trade, they got a quarterback right now who's playing better than Matthew Stafford, who, of course, was hurt much of the year, but most of the quarterbacks in the league as well. So he's giving you, he's bought you time to make a decision, to let this thing play out, to build the rest of the roster in a way he didn't expect at the fore of this whole thing. But teams that draft the right quarterback can take you from good to great.
Mm-hmm.
It can take you from a competitor to where the Kansas City Chiefs are. And of course, the Kansas City Chiefs are where they are because Patrick Mahomes is singular. He's one of one. So finding a guy like that inherently is extremely difficult. And I think if the Lions don't see somebody they believe in this draft, build out the rest of the roster. You don't have to make that decision right now. That's the flexibility Jared Goff has given you. But if you're sitting there at 6 and you believe in a guy, or 18, you believe in a guy who's there that you can build around for the future, I think you pull the trigger. I think the position is too important. And drafting a guy to compete with Goff gives you even more flexibility going forward. And if the guy works out, great. And if he doesn't, you still have Jared Goff. Jared Goff's contract is flexible enough financially that you can get out whenever you want to. It opens up the world to you, I think, going forward.
It's such a conundrum for Brett Holmes and his wife's paid what he's paid, right? You draft the wrong quarterback, it costs you your job. You don't draft a quarterback at all and Goff regresses, it could cost you your job. Like, it's such a job-defining decision, right? I think there is a difference between drafting a quarterback in the first round that you are inherently saying this is an heir apparent versus drafting even early in the second round. Now you're drafting the equivalent of Jimmy Garoppolo for Tom Brady. You're drafting a high-end developmental backup that could fill in an injury and possibly become trade bait later. You know, maybe be the starter if something doesn't work out contractually versus, like, you have to get six. The expectation is that's your starter. If it doesn't work out, what did you pass on at six that could have helped your defense, that could have helped take you to the playoffs? And you know, you're not filling a hole with a young, cheap player. You're now filling it with a backup quarterback that maybe never plays. Like, you know, I think the Packers, in hindsight, with the Jordan Love situation, like, what if they had drafted a wide receiver or, you know, a missing piece? Could that have been the piece that kept them from getting Aaron Rodgers to another Super Bowl? Lions are one step behind that. Obviously, they're trying to get to the playoffs, but still, like, if you take a quarterback that early, are you taking yourself out of advancing your organization for a piece that may never matter?
The Jordan Love pick didn't work out.
Yeah.
The Aaron Rodgers pick gave them 18 more years of competitiveness. So that's the decision you're making.
Don't you think there's a lot more Jordan Love picks than Aaron Rodgers picks or Patrick Mahomes? Like, I think Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers are samples we use a lot, or Lamar Jackson, but like, what is the success rate of quarterbacks? I think it's
below 50, even in the first round.
Yeah.
And that underscored that point. That's what I said. It's a difficult position to scout, to evaluate, to project. Again, going to Holmes, I had the same reaction you did, Justin, where it was like, I had written entire columns trying to say the thing that he said in one sentence, which is, you know, it's easier to get worse in that position than it is to get better.
It's a great line.
You can't do the come back. I get your last from David Lyle and Tim Boyle. Like, you can't. You got to do something to have, like, something. Anything can happen. First year Goff was there. You had to have Boyle in and fill in. And we saw how that worked out. So something has to be done. And, I mean, that was definitely not right. You can't come back like that again this year.
I think there's definitely value in drafting a guy. Ben and I have talked about some guys we like in the middle rounds in terms of Hooker or BYU.
Yeah,
like,
Jaren Hall.
Like,
yeah.
There are guys, I think, that fit that mold, that give you some stability and give you maybe a high upside guy that you can develop. But, like, it's the other thing, too. Like, we had Patrick Mahomes, said he had Andy Reid.
Yeah.
Like, I know we could talk about Ben Johnson being the guy, but where Ben Johnson bounces? Is Mark Brunell going to be the guy that takes your... I mean, this is a guy that was coaching high school before he came here.
Yeah.
And look, I don't know how much Brunell had to do with Jared Goff's success. I don't want to totally diminish that, but I don't know that he's capable of taking a high-level prospect, a C.J. Stroud or a Levis, and turning him into Josh Allen. Like, I don't know that, and I feel like that just is another layer of uncertainty that gives me pause with that discussion.
It's always a risk when you take a quarterback in the first round, or, like, I guess anywhere. Like, the success rate is obviously much higher in the first round, but it's still a risk because you don't know, and I think so much of quarterback success has to do with situation, with coaching, with the plan in place for young quarterbacks. A lot of teams just say, all right, you're a guy. Let's see how you do.
Yeah.
There's the Justin Fields in year one. That was a disaster, you know? So I think just based on where the lines are at, like, it's hard to come up with a healthier system for a young quarterback to come in and kind of sit for a year and then maybe take the reins in year two or year three than what the Lions currently have in place. And I know we don't know if Ben Johnson will be around beyond 2023, but same time, like, I'm sure Dan Campbell feels pretty good about the offensive plan that they have, whether Johnson was going to be here or not. So if you get a guy in here with this offense, behind this offensive line, with the young receivers they have, with the running game they have, I mean, it's a pretty damn good situation. But at the same time, I totally understand going defense with those two first round picks when you feel you have a chance to be competitive and make the playoffs and compete in the NFC North. Because these teams around them do not look good. And the Bears are still building. Rodgers going on McAfee every damn day. It's saying, I don't know if I'm coming back or not. Like, and the Vikings had the Vikings are what they are.
Man, that fourth down pass.
You know what that reminded me of? That fourth down pass by Cousins in that game. It's like a 3-yard pass on the fourth and eight, whatever. It reminded me of 2021 Jared.
We saw some plays.
And even with Stafford too, man. Like, Jim Bob Cooter's offense, that was 3/4 of the playbook, I think.
Gotta blame. Let's flip it around to the defense. Colton, you just brought it up, and I think even Brett Holmes said it right in his press conference, like that. He answered very directly. Like, he was asked, where do you need to improve the roster the most? And he was pretty candid in that it's the defense. I mean, just look at it. You love the most yards in the league. They've finished in the bottom five every year since Patricia's first year in 2018. It's been a long time since we've seen even bottom third, like, a defense from this team. It's been, guys, we've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of bad ball. So as we look forward, I mean, Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator, has a lot of credibility, right? And a lot of love in Detroit. I think we can understand why they back him, why Dan Campbell still backs him, even with some of the numbers the way they are. I mean, hey, Aaron Glenn is interviewing for the head job in Arizona. He already interviewed for the job in Indianapolis. His reputation precedes himself, right? In this game, he's well-respected, particularly for his relationships with his players, player development. And we did see last year, despite some deep, deep issues in the first half of the season, some tremendous gains in the second half. He figured out solutions. And I don't know how much firing Aubrey Pleasant was this like fantasy of everything that was going on in the first half, but they pushed the right buttons to get the most out of the players they had. I think we do see some obvious personnel issues that will be addressed in the draft. But besides that, I guess, or in addition to that, what do you guys see as... what do the Lions need going forward to play, let's say, competent football, defensive football in 2023?
Man, starts for me with a dominant defensive tackle. I know, talk about Patrick Mahomes, like, you're not going to just go out there and find your Aaron Donald. Like, I know it's a convenient thing to say, but, like, you need to find a high caliber three down defensive tackle that can control the middle of the field, can create havoc on the pocket in passing situations, and they just haven't had that guy for so long, since Sue, really, right? And so I know they've probably fallen out of the range where Jalen Carter's available, probably the most obvious answer in this draft. But, you know, whether it's free agency or the draft, you know, 5.2 yards per carry with the ground game, they haven't found a guy that's done consistent pressure there for years. Like, they need that piece because it all starts closest to the ball, right? And I know there's other, you need help at all three levels, but give me the guy closest to the football at the snap to kind of get this thing going in the right direction.
Yeah, no, you know, Bugs and Benito Jones combining for 70 snaps every game probably isn't great. So definitely agree with you there. I think Bugs had a good season, but definitely an upgrade there. Where they probably had Levi L penciled in their minds, and it's just kind of not there anymore. And who the heck knows what's going to happen there exactly. Yeah. But I mean, it's two spots for me. It's like you probably need two cornerbacks who can play, and you need a kind of a guy who can eat some reps on the inside of the defense. I mean, on the interior defensive line, I mean, it's really like that. Amani's gone. Will Harris was probably your best cornerback this season. That dude was playing some of the worst safety ball in the league a year and a half ago. I like Okuda. I like where it's heading. He definitely need to see a lot more. Jerry Jacobs is my type of dude for sure, but it's like that room really needs some help. They really need somebody for the inside nickel spot for sure. And then you're talking, I mean, they just need two cornerbacks and an interior defensive lineman are at the top of the board above all else for me right now. Short term, medium term, long term.
I'm not even sure Okuda's like a corner long term.
Yeah. I mean,
he looked so good in that Dallas game where he's playing closer to the box.
We've had box safety talks before between us.
I just don't know if he's down with it.
Based on training camp, but
I can't imagine he is.
Didn't like it at all.
But I get what Justin's saying. Like, if you can get like a dominant three tech in there, I think it's always going to be able to help you in different areas. It's going to help your linebackers. You can get a pass rusher type in there. It's going to help your secondary, give the quarterbacks this time to throw. So I get it. I think that's what Matt Eberflus with the Bears has said. Like, that's the piece that makes the defense go. I'm sure a guy like Jalen Carter can make a lot of defenses go. So you can blame the Raiders for collapsing against the Rams. So for that one. But at the same time, like, I just look at the corners and I get messed with Jeff. Like, I still know the full story there at the end of the season. Like, just getting bent. I know he was out the last game, but he was kind of benched. He was losing some playing time there at the end. They had him on as a gunner. That was interesting. Yeah. Jerry Jacobs, I think he can be a really good, like, number three corner.
Yeah.
And I love his mentality. I love the dog in him, you know, but he's pretty handsy. I think he got like 7 penalties in like 11 games, something like that. So if you can get a chance to get a cornerback with one of those picks, either 6 or...
when he has a mighty head in one game.
I forgot about that. My God, so if you can get a corner, like, I'm not against them getting a corner in the first and then coming back with a corner in the third or second. Like, I'm not against it at all. So I think they need a lot of help, especially with Aaron Glenn, the way he likes to play defense. He wants those man press fan cup corners. Like, in the Dolphins game, they just didn't do that. That was part of the game plan. They just didn't press at the line of scrimmage. And maybe that cost Aubrey Pleasant his job. But, like, they need to get some people that can do that, that can be able to play that style. Because Aaron Glenn likes to leave his corners on an island sometimes. And if you can't do that, you're going to get burned. So I think that would be, I guess, structurally, like, a better fit than get a couple of those guys in here.
I have a draft question. So, as we know, often, except for last year, which bucked the trend, but, like, quarterbacks tend to get inflated ahead of the draft, right? So Lions are drafting 6. We know there are 3 quarterbacks that are being mentioned in that top group, right? Levis, Stroud, and Young. If those guys all climb into that top 5 mix and Carter's sitting there at 4 or 5, is it worth giving up an extra asset, one of your second round picks Carter?
I would definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. And you've got the chips too. Is that like
hand those chips in the first place?
Right.
Carter also sounds pretty darn good.
Pretty good. It's the Rich Hill trade value chart, I believe 6 and 82 is more value than number 4. So I'm not sure that gets it done.
Yeah,
especially if the Bears let's say the Bears make a trade with the Colts.
Yeah,
move down to 4 if they want more assets. Maybe that's what
we can read about that in the Athletics.
I feel like I read that today.
I would definitely make that.
I've, like how many times did we see the Lions bullied in the running game? And it got better down the stretch, but like it was still not great. We saw the massacre in Carolina. I mean, they need girth up front. I also think they need a pass rusher. Wait, one more. Like, at 6 or 18, if there's a pass rusher there.
Sure.
Can you ever have enough? You can't. And I'm a big fan personally in building up strengths. Like I love what the Lions have done with their offensive line, even if it came at the expense of maybe fixing some immediate weaknesses along the way, because now you have a unit that can impose itself on the other team and opens up everything else, particularly when that strength is in the trench. And you're damn close to having that on the defensive line. Like, I think you're further along than you think. With Josh Pascal made a bigger difference when he started playing than I was expecting. Hutchinson obviously came on strong. He's one of the best rookies in the league. He might have been their best defensive player this year in Detroit. John Kaminsky was a huge asset. I think
he's great.
I think all the tea leaves point to him coming back. And there's some good things happening up front. There are also some weaknesses, particularly if Charles Harris doesn't return, if Romeo Okwara doesn't return to form. If you paired Aiden Hutchinson with another high-level elite blue-chip pass rusher with Josh Pascal, with Kaminsky, with Ali McNeil in the middle. James Houston, how could I forget? I mean, you open up so many possibilities for your defense. And when you have a pass rush that can impose its will, kind of like what the offensive line already does for Detroit, it opens up everything else for everyone else. It makes their job so much easier. It will make your quarterbacks, it will make them look better than what they've been. And it's been a problem.
I think the one thing that with the defense, right? Like the coaching staff was definitely trying to bring the narrative forward. And I think there was some fairness to it. Like at week 3, it was Alex Anzalone and Ali McNeil and then a bunch of guys that had never really played together. I think we saw continuity issues. So there's a need, I think, to retain some continuity this year is why I think like there's value in bringing back Kaminsky and Bugs and Anzalone. I think, you know, unless you can really find a clear upgrade, like I think there's a value in bringing back Alex. So, you know, that's one thing I'd like to watch the defense this year is like how much does Holmes stick with his strategy of retaining what he knows, because that's a big theme for him.
I think it's been the consistency they've built, especially with the culture guys they like. It's been a big reason they've been able. I think at the end of this year, the sum was greater than the parts on defense, and I think the consistency probably had a lot to do with that. But I think also when you're trying to make that step going from the bottom of the league to, I mean, competent would be nice. Something better than that would be even nicer. You have to level up personnel-wise at some point. And so for as good as Alex Anzalone is, which you just brought up, Justin, I mean, he's been everything they wanted him to be. And I think much more. He's been the clubhouse guy they wanted.
Yep.
Good chemistry. He's been the leader on the field. Where's the green dot? You can spot him from 7 floors up at Ford Field, no problem. You know, but he's also balled out in a way that I think we've never seen from him before. That's good stuff, but you can do better in this league than Alex Anzalone. If you want to play better defense, maybe you have to be better than Alex Anzalone.
Sure.
And so those are the hard questions.
I've been saying this for a while. I think they need their Amon-Ra St. Brown on defense. And I talk about that from an attitude perspective, right? Like he's an assassin, right? And like he just got this massive chip on his shoulder and it's always there. He never stops playing with it. But like, who's the assassin on defense? Like, that's not Aiden Hutchinson's personality. That's not Kirby Joseph's personality. Like, maybe Jerry Jacobs, but Jerry Jacobs doesn't have the talent that Amon-Ra has. Yeah. Like, right. You need, and I think, like, always I look at it and I see that at a linebacker spot, right? Like, you see a middle linebacker with that killer attitude. Like, I think those defenses are frequently awesome.
So you're saying they should trade for Jalen Ramsey? That you're saying?
Oh. Micah Parsons, Jalen Ramsey.
We're getting a little long in the tooth, getting a little late in the night. So we can wrap this up. What was a specific question? I'm going to wrap this up. With. I'm just curious. Okay, so true or false? I want to go all the way around.
Okay.
I want to hear what you guys have to say. True or false? The Detroit Lions will win the NFC North in 2023. Hey, like we all hear the buzz. We all see the buzz and we can understand it. And if all the things play out the way we think they might or could, they obviously can win the North. I think that, Colton, you made a good point earlier on the window for competitiveness that exists in the North right now with who knows what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. Minnesota looked pretty fraudulent this year. They led the Lions for less than 1 minute in 2 games, right? Already. And the Lions are going through the second year of a rebuild. The Chicago is the worst team.
Yeah, if they win that game, they're such an elegance of the division.
That's in year two. So I guess, but at the same time, like we have just seen like the apex of Jared Goff's career. A lot of things went right. Like injuries can happen. Yeah, anything can happen in this league. So I guess as the buzz begins to build around this team and it's not going anywhere, but like this hype train is going to leave the station anytime now for next year. Will this team win the North in 23?
I think so.
You're smiling when you say that.
I mean, it's just feel like it's enough momentum going around. It feels like they're doing the right things. Every draft they've gotten better. I see them coming back being better in nature. I don't see the confidence going down nowhere. You see how they did against division opponents. I'll be shocked if they don't.
And I don't think that's everything going right. I think it's just what we're seeing and developing this team here. Ben Johnson coming back, coaching staff. I mean, I think this team will use better.
I think you're banking on everything that worked last year, continuing in 2023, and you're banking on everything that didn't work getting solved, which is easier said than done. And you're banking on like minimal regression across the board. So it's easy for us to sit here now and look at the Vikings getting bounced in the first, the Bears where they are, Rodgers doing whatever, and say, yeah, of course the Lions are going to win the division. I'm still just kind of hesitant. There's something back in my mind. I don't know if that's just me being ingrained in the Lions beating out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Waiting for something to go wrong, but I don't know, man. I'm kind of 50-50 right now. I just look, again, I'll probably lean yes right now. Just because I trust Brad Holmes and his eye for talent in the draft, I think he'll find the right pieces. If they can spend a little more in free agency and maybe get like an upgrade at linebacker and some spots here and there, I think they'll have enough to definitely, I mean, they can already compete with this division as is. They went 5-1 this year. So I'm buying into it a little bit more. I'm not fully there, but I'll lean yes, I guess.
I'm going true. Yeah. I'll say true. And I'm basing that on how they played the division this year. I think the Vikings are what they are. You know, they've got some young pieces on that defense, but I think they're going to be what they're going to be. And it's just really easy to see Green Bay imploding. Like, it feels like it's kind of been waiting on that for 2-3 years now. And it feels like it's, I don't know. I think we've seen what Green Bay is too. They got some young pieces coming up too, but I just think the way the Lions played that division, gosh, it is hard to sit here and say that though, but I will go true. And it's going to be kind of a similar season. I feel like though the Vikings, they're not going to win that many close games this year, next year. I feel very confident. 11, saying that. 11, you know,
four games. 11-1.
Yeah, there you go. Ungodly stuff right there. And I don't think the Lions going 5-1 and trailing for less than a minute in that loss was a fluke. So I will go true.
Sure, false. Aaron Rodgers is going to be week one quarterback Green Bay.
False.
Yeah. I think that opens up me more. I was, you know, cynical on some earlier answers. I will not be cynical here. I think this, I will give Kyle some credit on this one correctly. The narratives are there too, right? Like 30 years since you won the division, the Barry Sanders statue getting unveiled. Like it just feels like the coronation has already kind of begun for what is happening. And it's, I guess, convoluted as momentum is in sports within a game, even let alone season to season. Like there is a ton of positive momentum in the guise of confidence, right? That's going on with this roster. And I think it's going to port and carry over. There's going to be a swagger about this team that is going to be there, I think, from week one next year. And I think it does lead to getting off that NFC North side. First one for this franchise.
I agree with you guys. Like, I think it's true. Like, I think that don't be good. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. The NFL
is a crazy sport.
I also think them missing the playoffs, like, they'll take that into 2023 with them and say, look how close we got.
Yeah.
We think we could have beaten some of these teams in the playoffs. So let's make sure we're not in that position again next year.
I don't feel like being complacent, which is, I think that's the big difference with their whole same old lives in the past. Like, yeah, we had a winning record, but nobody felt like they was placing. You know, I was being out and Russ and Ron looking out, and he was like, yeah, that's cool, but it's not what we're here to do, just having a winning record. We're trying to get to the playoffs. We're trying to change this. And I feel like that would be definitely going forward next year.
I guess what feels different to me, I mean, this is my 10th year covering the team, and I don't remember a time where I felt like the foundation of what they'd built was more solid. Because it's not just like one guy went berserk. Amon Ra went berserk and carried them to a bunch of wins. It carried them to a near postseason berth. It was Amon Ra 1 week. It was Jared Goff the next. It was Jamal Williams the next. The defense did its thing. And that first win against Green Bay that really like jumpstarted this whole winning streak. They won games in different ways with different units. I mean, that's to me a hallmark of something sustainable. And it's a young core that's entirely like locked up going forward. These aren't aging veterans. That 2014 team, which was the best team that I had covered in Detroit, still the best team that I've covered in Detroit, and that defense was very good. That was a very old team with a lot of bad contracts that were about to get swept away. And even that team it didn't feel like the beginning of something. It felt like the end of something.
Yeah.
And the Dallas game was the finale. This feels like the start of something. It feels entirely different than most teams I've covered in the past.
Just has me reflective of like where we were 2 years ago, right? Hiring a GM that's unknown in a lot of circles. You know, I don't think he was on even a lot of our radars with the list of 10 or 20 candidates we were all throwing out there. You hire a coach that maybe was on the radar, but like kind of a wild card in a lot of ways. And, you know, they hired him separately, Sheila Ford and Sheila Hamp and Rod Wood making the decision, and they don't have a lot of equity. And like, I'm a believer of like, you let things play out and see how they go. But like, there was a lot of cynicism and it was all valid, right? And to see that, like, how well that vision and plan has come together is pretty impressive. Like, it really is. Like, it is a lot of unknowns and unprovens, and it just, it's really coalesced in a really unique and impressive way.
Colton, this is, you're the one rookie in the beat from this year. I'm curious what your experience was covering Detroit, especially as it maybe juxtaposes with what you expected.
Yeah, I mean, even when I took the job or was in talks to take the job, I was talking to Chris Burke a lot, and he was just like, I think they're close. Like, it might not be this year, but they're not taking any shortcuts with the way that they're building this thing up. He felt like they had some, you know, the right people in place to build this thing up. And so for me, it's like, I'm just here to observe and kind of learn about what they're doing. And I thought that was really cool to kind of see it kind of take place this past year. Like Dan Campbell said, you know, we don't finish 8-2 without getting, you know, 1-6 first, kind of taking our lumps and learning how to win, and like the young players learning how to win. So I think they're well positioned now because of it. I think you have a head coach like Dan Campbell who's coached under and played under a lot of good coaches. So with the guys they have in place, it makes sense. They've been doing it slowly. They're very intentional about how they're building this up. And I think you're seeing the end result now. And it does feel like the beginning. It does feel like their window is just kind of opening. And for Detroit and the city and the fans that have kind of watched, you know, football teams that didn't really have a plan and, you know, executives that didn't really have a plan, this feels a little bit different.
It doesn't feel fair that these guys didn't have to crawl through the tunnel, right? They didn't have to Shawshank Redemption Act. They just get to pop right into the cover in the box under the tree. I think we've looked at each other long enough.
I appreciate it. Let's just reset it real quick. Justin Rodgers from the news. Ben Raven, of course, always from Them Lives. Alan T from Fridays. Eric Woodier from ESPN. Brooke Kyle from Live, of course. Collins, I really appreciate you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun.
See you in a year.
This has been Ben Raven and Kyle Mikey of MLive's Detroit Lions Beat. Thank you for listening to the Dungeon of Doom, an MLive Detroit Lions podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Google. Like I said, wherever you get them and listen to them, make sure to subscribe to the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks again.